everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week is Brad Park. Hello, Brad.
Hello again, Jay.
How are you doing?
So far, so good. It's the middle of the afternoon here on the West Coast. If I was still back when I used to call home, it'd be in the late evening, so these time zones are tricky.
It's true. So, Brad, could you go ahead and give everyone an introduction in case they haven't heard any of the previous episodes we've done?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So, name's Brad Park. I'm originally from the Mid-Atlantic area and one of the Mollywhoppers, the team's kind of organized by Danny McGeehan. I'll be part of USAWTC Team 2, should that actually occur in 2021. But I've been playing War Machine for 8-ish years, and about 7 of those was Crix exclusively. And this past year, maybe a little over a year now, has been an excursion into Minions, which I've been thoroughly enjoying. Since that time, the only actual event where I could play Minions, well, I guess I played them at Captain Kind of Masters. I think I was like 4th or 5th or something. But anyway, the only other time I played Minions was in the VTC, where the team I was on won the event, and I was playing Arcadius and Helga one. So Minions have been a ball, and I'm having a lot of fun still playing them.
All right, so the reason why you're on is because we're going to talk about Minions all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And just a quick refresher on the format for those who are tuning in. We'll talk for about 45 or 50 minutes, and then pause our conversation and do a bonus episode that will be available for people who support the Patreon. So let's dive in, I usually go through these kind of chronologically, and Jacob has an evergreen question that he asks each guest, and he was first person
was
to.
Was I
interested in that one? I actually wouldn't be surprised if he did, but
okay. You have
new options at this point, so we'll see if it's the same, I guess. Mm-hmm. He says, Brad, 40, 50, and 120mm base list only, what list would you run and why? And he says, the more 120mm bases, the better.
Boy. What would I run for 120mm? It'd probably be some like Xerxes 2 double Hydra, all gas, all the time kind of list. I don't think it'd be good, but I guess I'd play that.
Okay.
If I was trying to make a actual list that was 40 and 50 mil bases plus, I just play Pilgrim of Storm of the North and call it done.
Is there one in Minions that you...
Oh, sure. I guess I shouldn't be picking other factions, huh? So I think you can get pretty close to doing what I just said in Storm of the North out of Vengeance of Dunia. I played a Cold Grimma list once. I don't think I had Bellow's crew in it, but I could be mistaken. If I did, you could easily swap things around, so it was only 40 millimeter base plus. I guess it's a Ragnar list I've been really into. You can't do that, because I don't know how I can get Malvin without taking a Gobber. I guess I could take Dez and Gobbin. That would work. I could jigger the list for that. Yeah, so that I think that would be it. It would be some Vengeance of Dunia, Ragnar, or Cold Grimma list, probably.
Okay. He follows up and says, what list are you currently playing the most at this moment, and how's it working out?
So the two lists I'm playing the most right now are Sturm and Drang Will Work for Food and Ragnar Vengeance of Dunia. And I really like both. I would say the Sturm list I'm playing more than Ragnar, but the Sturm list just has a pile of options. Every turn, every solo is a toolbox, I have a lot of fun playing it. TK, it's a hell of a drug.
It's true. That is true.
Even without Arc Notes, you get a lot done with TK, even without Arc Notes. It's wild.
So, Zach Witten, he says, what's the most fun list that one can have with 3 units of Gatorman Posse?
Most fun. So, I think there's probably a couple ways to think. Well, there's probably 2 ways to think about it, right? So if you're trying, when you say fun, to compete in a competitive sphere and feel like you're in a game while you're playing it, I would say you're probably looking for Malak, because just of his consistency with mortality to death pack to the feat, combined with being able to revive them through the game as you're already stacking armor. Eventually, Soul Harvester may matter if you can get rid of your opponent's archons and they have souls. So Malak is probably the the most fun if you're looking for the competitive end. That being said, if you're looking for like a list you could bring to a game night one week, or really a tournament anyway, who cares? Just play whatever you want. But if you're looking for something that might be a little less optimized, I don't think there's a more fun caster to play in Minions than Barnabas 2. He is a monster in and of himself of just going in and wrecking face. Execration of Blackest Knight, Blackest or Darkest, don't remember. It's the most metal spell name in the game. So every time you spend the 2 fury for that, you make sure you have to say the whole name. And you can tell I haven't played him in a few months because I couldn't remember the exact name. But that spell does a lot more than you originally think it would. It's similar to a Starcrossed, but it's tougher to apply. Luckily, he's pretty good at face tanking, though.
Yep, that is true. He is good at that.
Remarkably so. he's a lot of fun to play. I've had him survive charges from Gargantuans and Colossals and then one round them in return. If you can get him going with corpses and models to sacrifice, so you're probably going to want to look to take Shamblers if you're in that list to make sure you have good models to feed off the table. But yeah, Barnabas is a lot of fun.
All right, so the next question from Zach, he says, what should the Pharaoh Gargantuan be?
So if there should be a Pharaoh Gargantuan, I'm thinking what we should see is something that for sure had Arcadius at hand here, right? So I don't know the way you could do it, but I definitely think it should be some mad scientist like combination of a existing colossal in War Machine somewhere, Stormwall, Judicator, Conquest, maybe Conquest because everything else on Warhogs is usually Kadoran. And then find some way to bring over some of those pieces onto the pig or go the reverse direction. So the Warhogs and Roadhogs are like base Pharaoh and the arms become mechanical. Maybe go the other direction. See if Arcadius really became a mad villain and he started with a robot and started attaching the living head and everything else and made a living, primarily metal Pharaoh Gargantuan. I'm not a games designer. I don't think Blotch would do that, and I don't think they should, but that's where my mind went. As long as I have, like, a giant, like, Gunbore gun, like, something that I really want to be shooting every turn, then I'm fine with it rules-wise.
All right, so Zach's next question is, with the new troll-slash-pig theme, what should minion players look for in trolls? What should troll players look for in minions?
All right, so, yeah, I this one's a great question. So I think Vengeance of Dunia will generally do more for minions players than it will do for trolls players. I think the interesting thing that trolls players can get if they're looking for the list pair, and I will say I am not a trolls player, so I won't be a definitive voice for this one for sure. But I think Azazello running a block of champs does something similar to what they currently have, but does it a little differently. So I think he could be a replacement for like a Cold Grima or a Madrek 1 in a list pair. I don't know if you know necessarily want to pair those things together, but like a Champ Brick Grima Azazello is pretty interesting. The other thing it can bring them is a Helga 2 list to really turn some of the Warbeasts up to 11, especially because the Troll Warbeasts, more so than the Pharaoh Warbeasts, have some better ranged options. So bringing in maybe like 2 Bombers with Helga 2 that now have the ability to walk 7 and then repo 3 at the end of their activation. And when it comes to feet turn, they'll be able to advance another, they'll be able to effectively repo 5 with Refuge. Especially with most Vengeance of Dunia lists being able to bring double Dunia Archons, you can actually run a handful of range heavies pretty well because of that double Shepherd's Call. Assuming you kind of, play in a fairly tight ball. And I think those, from what I've seen, I'm going to use kind of John Henry as my reference point here, were kind of some of the staple lists you would see in Trolls. You would see one list that ran champs and had a delivery system for champs pretty well. And there was sometimes, but not always, a like beast heavy list. I know for John for a bit that was Doomshaper 3, at times past for other players. Bearka 2 was up in the running for that. There are a handful of other lists, though, that Vengeance of Dunia can't really replace. Like, I don't think it can replace, like, a Power of Dunia list that's running a lot of Rune Shapers and things of that nature. I also don't think that it has as many good ambush options. So Storm of the North, should you look for ambushing bears, are still the, I think, the A-plus, like, premium kind of ambushing models or units. But I think those are the things you're probably looking for in trolls. In minions, and I'm going to, again, speak from one of the more competitive steamroller convention-type mindset when it comes to list pairs. From what I've been doing, especially with Avengers Union now that came out, is you'll have a list that's a Willow for Food list, and generally one that wants to use Primal Archons to help Matt fix, whether it's for the Gator side or the Pharaoh side. So for myself right now, I've been playing Sturm und Drang, but that could easily be Helga 1. It could easily be Maylock, Barnabas 2. Jaga, I don't usually run with Primals, but you could do a Jaga list with Primals. You could do Azzelar War for Food. That list is still very good. But generally one of those lists, and almost regardless of the cast you're going to be playing them with, they're a little bit more of an all-comers list. It has those shortcomings against usually Strange Bedfellows and like an Exalted kind of list, anywhere where there's a in-mass construct infantry kind of list. I think the same would probably be true if Clockwork Legion ran the actual Clockwork units, but because it's mostly Warjacks, even though your Void Archons will do a whole lot, you're generally okay-ish against all the Warjacks at a convergence. So and those you can almost interchange. You can use any one of those. But when it comes to Vengeance of the Junior, the nice thing is, at least for myself, the off list for these generals lists have been something that has been exclusively and kind of dedicatedly good into guns. So for the longest time, those options were really only two things, was Rask or Arcadius. Mm-hmm. Rask because you just turn off the guns for a round, and Arcadius because you threaten farther than the guns can shoot generally. Now though, we get some new options when it comes to Vengeance of Junior to kind of pair out Woolworth for Food list. So the three chief among them for myself have been Ragnar. I think the feat is tremendous when it comes to surviving against guns, especially in combat with Earth Sanctuary, and the ability to take Gudrun 2 as a rec option. Not that you can't do that in Woolworth for Food, but you can't take Ragnar in Woolworth for Food. So all of those things combined together allow you to have a +6 defense swinging against guns kind of on a stick, especially combined with the trenches as well. So you have some spaces on the board that are already giving you cover on your side of the table guaranteed. So Ragnar is, I think, chief among them for me. Close up there behind them, though, are some lists that I'm also still testing, but I have less games in with. I think Kolgrimma. Even with the loss of the Runebearer, because you have trenches all the time that on your side of the table to help keep her safe, I think that's a pretty big boon for her. The other thing that's really good for her is your Fury economy on like a round two is a little worse, right? So in Storm of the North or Band of Heroes, wherever in a player, you can harmonious her with the Runebearer to make a cloud cost one. You can drop another two and still be camping two. Whereas in Vengeance of Dunia, if you want to put down those same three clouds on a round two, you're going to only be on one. So it's a little more dangerous on that front. But when it comes to the mid game, when you need Kolgrimma to start doing more than just dropping clouds, that free anima you get in, especially if you build a list with either a Pyre Troll or I can't think of it, the EBT Animus, the one that makes you like immune to knockdown and everything else. Like those free anima can really start playing with the amount of stuff she can get done. So the mid game Fury economy becomes almost the same. You do lose the bonus control area, which is huge for her feet, but because of Gudrun 2 in the trenches, you can still kind of position her up more aggressively on the rounds before you feet, so that you don't need to maybe feet as far to still reach the areas you're looking to reach. And then the other one, and this one I have not played in a little bit, this one I've kind of played when Vengeance was in testing, is Gunnbjorn 1. His feat that just makes you immune to guns is, you know, fantastic for delivering through, combined with Rockwall. So similar to Ragnar, being able to pick individual models and give them cover, combined with Gudrun 2. Now you have the trenches and the Rockwall and Gudrun 2. So you start getting really relevant or really good against guns. And Rockwall combined with champs, if you're playing at some more melee list, you can start blocking landing spots. So it becomes even harder to trade into your champs. But Vengeance of Junior overall, I think, has like three build archetypes. I kind of just ran over one of them, where you play like a champ brick, and that would be a Gunmure 1, a Kolgrimma, Ragnar, Azzello, I think, is the other one chief among them that you could do that with, but I don't think Azzello's list is good into guns, which is why I didn't include him there. The second version, I think, is one that's going to play extremely Warbeast heavy. So I think if you're looking for a Helgatu or a Carver, I think both play really well in Mendes Dunia, but Carver generally goes to no camp, so it's kind of scary playing him. And then I think the last option is a Gundren 2, where you play a really ranged heavy list. You could, of course, still play him in Cruel Company or other themes in Trolls, but if you want to play a ranged heavy list out of minions, I think the only option you have, for the most part, is a Gundren 2 Vengeance of Dunia list, where you're really banking on the feet and exposed to get a lot of work done range-wise. So I think the most common pairings you'll find are a list out of Vengeance of Dunia that is good into guns, and then like a kind of standard staple forward for food list. But there's other certainly other options you can go. It depends on what you're planning for, what do you expect to see if you go to an event or something.
All right, so that was the next question from Zach. He says, if I get drunk tomorrow and buy into Thornwood, what should my first 3 to 5 purchases be?
Holy shit. if I was going to play in Thornfall, I'd play Azazello. I'd probably go double Brigands. I'd go double Dunion for sure. I'd probably take Ambushers, but maybe not. I don't know. Maybe Commandos. You're definitely going to want Valks. Those are just good. That list is going to struggle in armor, so you're probably going to want 2 Warhogs. I'm now at like 7-8 purchases, so I think we're good there.
Okay. And then his final question is, why is it that all minions do is win?
Well, it's because I'm playing them. No, sorry. I'm just...
Well, there you go.
Sorry. I should do that with people I know, not just on the internet in general. Sorry. I think to answer that question sincerely, I think minions right now, similar to mercs out of irregulars, especially if you're looking for like the standard Willard for food setup, is it just provides you a lot of options, right? So on any given turn, your list can do a handful of things in terms of maybe where it'll commit to, maybe really applying a lot of offense to, maybe going the more defensive route. I think one really good example in a model that's been working her way back into a lot of my Warwick food lists has been Lanissa. So Hunter's Mark, always relevant. It's been around since the dawn of time. But I think something that has become much more relevant the more often I've been playing it, especially because you can combine defenses on Lanissa to really make her sticky to remove, whether it's Dunian Archons or Hermit, or both sometimes in a round. Winter Storm is a fantastic control tool in this meta, I found. Especially because of the timing of Winter Storm. For those that don't know what it does, it removes Flight, Pathfinder, and Isle of Sight when models activate in her command, which is 9 inches. Which doesn't seem very far. But if you can catch like a Menard Archon or really most heavy warjacks, and then catch them in Winter Storm, even if they got Pathfinder from an objective, or they're getting it from a solo kind of activating and giving it to them as part of like a star action, like a who's that Runewood that does that in Signar? Regardless. If something's giving them Pathfinder or giving them flight, if they activate in your command range, they lose that. And a lot of times if people are kind of banking on having that ability next round, especially on Archons, they'll be in forest or in rubble. So Winter Storm removing that from them can at times remove them from the game for a round. And if your opponent really has to deep dive in for Lanissa, who can be behind an obstruction or have stealth of prowls active, and the first handful of attacks you can put into her, you can just get rid of with her base defense stats, she become like a real problem to dig out of a list. That is one like very niche specific thing in a Warlord for food list. But that's just like one of like kind of the pile of tools, even on like the defensive front, that the list can employ to give you options on any given turn.
All right. So our next question, this comes from David. He says, with the Vengeance of Dunia theme getting so much attention, which casters do you think still fit better and will work for food? And which of those do you see cover up the weaknesses best of what's available in Vengeance of Dunia? Or do you think that minions should just play Vengeance of Dunia now?
No, I don't think you're going to see, I don't think for the most part you're going to see double Vengeance of Dunia. I think you could. I think there are list pairs that would do just fine if you did that. But I don't think generally that's what you'd see. I think of the casters you can take out of minions in Vengeance of Dunia, I think you can make an argument that Helga 2 might still be better in Warlord for Food, because you gain Void Archons, which are very good under her feet. But that's, I think, more of the strength of Void Archons than anything else. Just combine with some of the other solos you might want to take. But Helga 2, I think, is on the line. You could probably do it in either theme. Helga 1, I think, is still definitely better in Warlord for Food, between Primals to Totem Hunter to Voids to Flugwug. Like, there's a lot of solos that came out for Warlord for Food that really bake her sing that you don't have in Vengeance of Dunia. You do get Defenders, Warded Champs, which are fantastic, of course, especially when you have double Dunia Arc on the list to keep them safe. But that's kind of the whole crux of the list. So if your opponent has ways to, you know, ignore Defender's Ward, whether it's blessed or just stripping the upkeep, then, you know, you're not getting a whole lot of benefit out of it. Dash is, of course, good. But there's other ways you can get speed buffs out of Vengeance of Dunia not that Dash is outmatched, it's a fantastic spell, but, you know, you're not necessarily hinging on it. Who else managed to take Carver? Carver's definitely better than Vengeance of Dunia. Like, not even close to a question, really. The stone puts it over the top. Getting things to armor 21 throughout the game is good. It's certainly not a bad thing. Having them be 23-ish for the majority of the game is ridiculous. It's very good. And then I'm missing a minions. Oh, Azazello. Azazello, I think it depends on what you want to do with them, right? So if you're looking for a list that is going to be incredibly hard to dislodge, and incredibly hard to trade into, I think Vengeance of the Junior might be potentially better in the direction to go to. If you're looking for a list, I think, though, that can at times use the offensive part of the feat, the strength bonus specifically, I mean, I think you're really looking for a Warlord for Food. I think Flugwug, Totem Hunter, and sometimes Voids and Primals, depending on where models go and how you can use the Beacon Pistol, can get the strength part of the feat. I think a Vengeance of the Junior list, for the most part, because of the threat range that you'll usually be getting from champs and other solos in the list, I think you'll probably be feeding just for the dual-listed armor, which is not as spectacular. But it is incredibly hard to kill. But your whole armor cracking, for the most part, out of Azazello comes on feat turns. So you're going to need that list back by two or three heavies to get through your opponent's heavy warjacks or models similar in that midpoint of the game. And then I answered the minions. Did they ask what casters are better, what troll casters are better in Vengeance of Dunia?
He asked what casters you think fit better and will work for food.
Okay, yeah, so I did that for those. Helga 1, definitely. Azazello, maybe. Carver, definitely not. Helga 2, maybe. And then those are the only options, I think, out of minions that you can take of Vengeance of Dunia. I think everything else is troll warlocks.
All right, so David's next question is, how much have you played around with all the battle engines available now? I've always looked at the War Wagon with some envy. Have you found a place for one or two of those?
I'm going to disappoint a lot of people here. I've never used any of the minions or trolls battle engines. The last battle engine I've ever put on the table is a Wraith engine. So not something I can speak on, unfortunately. I will say, and I think this is generally how I approach the game in terms of mindset, right? So out of Crix, I would bring really whatever the fuck I felt like to game night. When it came to minions, I bought into the models I knew I'd be using very frequently. And I think that there are some more niche or specialized lists that can use those battle engines, whether it's a Sacrovault to a Meat Thresher to a War Wagon. But I would only use those maybe in one or two lists across the entire faction, so I didn't buy into them. I think in time I likely will, because that's generally how I like to play this game. But I don't have any first-hand experience on where I would take them, nor have I really put any mental thought into it, because I don't own the models. Even when I play on Wartable, I really try to limit myself to only playing with models that I own, so that when if I like the list, so I can actually go play it later on in real life, later on down the road. Whereas if I fall in love with a list I don't own, once I have to start playing real life again, it's not an option. So I don't have any Battle Engine experience, and that's maybe something I should work on. But I mean, yeah, sorry to disappoint.
And one of the things he specifically also asked about the War Wagon, and that one's in particular probably a little bit difficult because it had kind of been balanced around being used with the Krill Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like using it in a minions list is going to be a little bit difficult to make a place for it, right?
Well, I don't think you can take it in a minions list other than Vengeance of Dunia, but in Vengeance you can take a stone. So that'll work out. The thing they changed that's different from what it was pre-Vengeance of Dunia, but this was only a thing on Grissel 1 or 2, whichever one had Hoofit. I think Grissel 1. Is Hoofit used to not specify living. And because Boomhauer 3 is now Hoofit on a stick generally, they added a living clause to Hoofit so you can no longer use that on the War Wagon. So one of its better applications has been taken away for mostly trolls, but it's not something that we could ever do as like part of a minions list. I think there is certainly some game for it though, a War Wagon with Gundren 2 because of what the feat does with that gun. Especially because of the size of the AoE. But I have not tried it yet. Naturally, to be honest with you, I haven't tried Gundren 2 yet. I've tinkered with lists and I've watched the list played, but I have yet to play it myself.
All right. So the next question, this comes from Seto Midor. He says, Brad, what are the top three lists in your meta, in your opinion, and how are you adapting your pairing to deal with those?
So I don't know the Las Vegas metas at all yet, so I'll go back to the East Coast to answer this. So for the East Coast, I would say the top three things that I would run into, Harbinger, still very common, Kruger 2, incredibly common. The third thing, maybe, so I'm trying to think back to like actual tabletop playing, might still actually be Zol 2. So Harbinger, we're pretty okay against because Void Archons give you a lot of outs with work for food lists. Primal Archons also really help landing Shadowbinds in key scenario areas to be able to hit through Awe and sometimes Ashen Veil. And then Kruger 2. Kruger 2 is a game, kind of no matter who you play it with, caster-wise, I mean. It's certainly not a game that's easy, but it's also not one that you need to necessarily tech specifically for. I have found success with Helga 1, with Sturm and Drang. I think with Malok, I've played that matchup. You have options kind of no matter who you're playing it with. It's certainly a game you can lose, though. Rebuke is still very good. But most lists will run a Dunion, sometimes Eilish. So you have ways to get rid of it, but you have to be mindful that if you spread your units out too wide, should you be taking like Feral Valks or something of that nature, that you'll need to have something nearby to be able to smack that spell off. And then Zol 2 is still a bit of a bear. I've played Arcadius into it a handful of times, and being able to threaten as far as you do combined with Overtake has been really good. I played the Rask game, but not for months. Malvin of Mayhem there with Elasticity and Fury can Pac-Man through even defeated Zol 2 immortal units, so that's pretty spectacular. New things to try. I want to see if Ragnar can do it. I don't know if he can, but we both effectively have armor feats. And the list still does have Malvin and Mayhem, but I have no way to give him elasticity. But everything in the list, like everything that's going to be worth putting into melee, can get through a Supreme Guardian. So we have a lot of angles on the Supreme Guardians and some angles on Immortals. It seems hard, but maybe doable. So I think those would be my top considerations, those three. The only other thing I would say that would come up is I think Aurora 2 is going to be much more prevalent once tabletop playing actually starts again. But I don't want to use the War Table meta because if I'm playing on War Table, which I haven't done recently because I don't have the internet set up in my apartment, but at least as of a week ago, I was still playing fairly often, multiple games a week. Generally three or four. It's tough to know what the meta will look like because that's a fairly global community that I was getting games in with, for what I have to prepare for locally. And I've only met two people in the Vegas meta, so I don't have an idea of what's usual out here yet.
So what would you, I mean, I guess to expand or reframe mm-hmm. the question, if you were to consider your meta to be the online meta, sure. what would you say are the top lists on there at the moment?
Sure. So Siege 1, I think, is gaining a lot of popularity, and actually because of the person that asked this question. I think Siege 1 has a lot of play right now. I think Aurora 2 as well, just because it's a very strong list. It threatens very far. Everything's a contract for the most part. And what would be a third? I don't see as many people playing Harvey, but Serenia is still popular. But I would say just kind of that general Menoth, Faithful Masses kind of setup. I would say those are probably the most common. Do you want to answer what I'd play into those or no?
Sure.
Yeah, so the Faithful Masses thing is kind of the same stuff you're looking to do that you'd be doing against Harvey. The Siege 1 list is where you really need like that dedicated answer to guns. So for a long time, that was Rascal Arcadius. Now I think you have play to test Kolgrim or Ragnar or Gunbjorn 1. And then, what was the other thing? Aurora 2. So Aurora 2 is a hard matchup, but I think one that you can play with like the general Warlord for Food setup. But one model that has become very, very, very important, actually two models become very important. Boomhauer 2 Covering Fire is a great way to hold sometimes an entire flank of the table. You like put a Primal Archon in a zone or near a flag and drop a Covering Fire about an inch or two in front of them. And aside from an arc, like one of your opponent's Archons or one of your opponent's Warjacks, all the angels can't touch you, which is the majority of the list generally. So that's a tremendous piece there. And the other one, if your list can afford to take Lunissa for the reasons I said before, if your opponent is like aggressively positioning angels behind an obstruction and you can put Lunissa on the other side of it with Winter Storm up, you can effectively, you know, ground a whole flank of the table. I'd say those two pieces are especially strong, but it's certainly an uphill matchup, it feels like, every time.
So I guess one of my questions for you is that about if we go back towards the start or middle-ish, I guess, of mm-hmm. or around the pandemic times of last year,
yep.
there was a lot of Flames of the Darkness. It was, you know, I went to the Las Vegas Open, and it was like, felt like almost everyone was playing that list. Do you feel like it has had a drop-off in popularity?
Yes, certainly. I think it's dropped off in popularity. I don't know if it's actually that much worse. I think, in my own personal opinion, anytime anything is nerfed, even if deserved, from what I've seen, and even if it lands in a reasonable spot, people will stop playing it to go play something else. Striker 2 Flames was a thing for a long time, but I don't think there's many Signar players. I think the most list you saw out of Flames was Fiona. Which is fine. Fiona got nerfed. Flames is still untouched for the most part. I can't think of anything that changed, offhand. But that change to Fiona had the popularity of the list, fall off a cliff. Befuddle is still good. It's no longer stupid, right?
Like, yeah.
The spells.
Fiona's still great.
Second?
I said Fiona is still great.
Right. Fiona's still fantastic. But because that one thing was changed on her almost overnight, I personally haven't seen it. I'm sure people still play her here and there. But for all the games I'm able to play on War Table, then all the games I'm also able to watch, I haven't seen any Fiona post-nerf.
Mm.
Like, just none. Whereas she was the most played caster by a wide margin at VTC. And shortly after the change, went to absolute none. It's pretty remarkable. It feels like most lists out of Mercs or Aurora 2 and then some irregulars build generally, but even though Fiona can be taken there, I've been seeing at times Shay to Gordon to Osram, just kind of a whole bunch of maybe older staples than the rise that Fiona had before, but Fiona's still good. You just don't see her, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it says something about kind of the, like you mentioned, the psychology of people. There is the aspect of whenever there is a nerf, there tends to be a little bit of an overreaction. But there also tends to be, you know, there's a lot of times where, people can just be like grinding a lot of games with the caster, and then when something gets nerfed, they're kind of like, okay, well, this is my opportunity to play something new. So
I'll agree with that as well. I think that certainly makes sense to maybe why, but yeah, the drop off has been black and white, and it's pretty staggering.
Okay, so the next question. You become known as a good map maker for War Machine and Hordes. What basic guidelines do you base your map making on?
Yeah, so in a handful of Discords, there's a bot called Shipmate. If you message ?map to it, it'll link you a war table map with terrain built on it, and then it'll suggest a randomized scenario. Sometimes you have to move the terrain pieces to fit some flags or flags. I'm sorry, some objectives or flags. In terms of what I'd look to do, the kind of key concepts are, I don't want to mirror the terrain on both sides of the table. I'd like to have, the side choice matter. But you also can't make it so that the side choice wins the game in and of itself, right? So, putting down four forests on one side of the table, probably too much. You don't want to have line of sight blocking terrain on every map you make. Let me phrase it. Line of sight blocking terrain in the middle on every single map you make. And you also want to diversify what the line of sight blocking is, whether it's cloud to obstruction to forest, so you have like a varied game experience. You also, I think, I try to kind of combine what the WTC terrain is, where it's generally those larger pieces with maybe more things you'd see around the local US metas, where it's more to like an average, maybe smaller side. So instead of doing all of one of those or all of the larger items, I kind of try and mix and match so that maybe one area of the table has a really large cloud, or one area has a large body of water or forest, you know, et cetera, and so on. But the other things that I'm mindful of is to make it so that the players don't have to do any adjusting on their own, is I'll check to make sure the obstructions and walls aren't within 5 inches of each other, that they're not within 6 inches of a side table edge, and they're not within the 10-inch deployment zones. Not to throw any shade, but there are some of the pre-made maps of War Table, I don't know who made them, but that are just illegal. Like, the obstructions are too close to an edge, they're too close together, some are in deployment zones. So that's part of the reason I jumped on wanting to make them. I also found that the terrain at times was way too clustered to the center on some of the pre-made maps. So the other thing I try to be mindful of is placing items so that there is things maybe just outside deployment zones or on the kill box line, to make it so that if you are playing a matchup and your caster wants to like tow the kill box line the entire course of the game, if you're playing against a list that's a heavy assassination list, well, there's a side of the table that gives that option, kind of thing. So if you're given a table side, you're able to make that intelligent choice. If it's taken away from you and your opponent takes that side from you, maybe the terrain on that side of the table, though, is a little worse. Maybe there's less things to hide behind, even if there's nothing specifically on the kill box line. I think those are probably the rough outlines. It's also something I just generally enjoy doing. I set the tables for the steamrollers I ran for years. So even though it's War Table and it's not the same, it kind of brings back that little bit of nostalgia of setting the table and being mindful of where things were interact with scenario pieces. At times, I'll try to envision if I was playing on the table on either side where I think the line of engagement would be, kind of based on how the terrain's sitting. So it's just fun for me. I enjoy it. I think anyone can do it. It's not rocket science, but I've tried to make it easy for people, and they've really jumped onto using it.
All right. So his next question related to terrain is, what can we do to increase the uptake and respect for rough terrain as an interactive and dynamic terrain piece?
Is this still Daniel?
Yes.
Now tell Daniel to fuck off.
I don't know that I'm going to do that.
Is that an option? Can we say that on this podcast?
We have at this point, so.
All right. Chain Attack says, Daniel, fuck off. Or not Chain Attack. Meta. My bad. But to Daniel's point, there when War Table first came out, there was a handful of terrain pieces labeled just rough terrain. So it was difficult ground. They offered no defensive bonuses, no line of sight blocking. They just slowed down things. And Daniel plays Siege 1, and it's paired usually with nothing because it's just he only plays Siege 1. So So anything that can slow things down to get to his guns is what he clamors for. And I pushed for a long time to relabel every piece of rough terrain on War Table to rubble, and it has been done that way. So War Table currently does not have rough terrain, and Daniel can get over it.
Or can he?
Apparently not. This is still lingering in his mind.
Okay, so I think that's where we're going to end up wrapping up on this first episode. Is there anything that you're wanting to promote before we sign off, Brad?
If I could promote anything, right? I think people will very quickly jump on Doom Death Spirals and whatever Facebook group you're in or whatever Discord group you're in saying the game's dying. And it's only dying if you let it, right? If you enjoy playing, if you want to try War Table, I found it to be fantastic. The community you can find from it is global. There are games you can get nearly any time of the day. The guys in the UK out of Fish Court are running leagues and events. They're actually running a convention coming up in February where they're going to have games and different events scheduled over the course of an entire weekend. The Line of Sight guys are always promoting new Brawl Machine events or new league events. Like, there is things to do if you enjoy War Machine, even if your local community has slowed up to stop because of COVID. And I can understand why it has if it did. But to have your legs back under you when things start up again, War Table's been fantastic. I can't advocate for it enough.
Okay. The things I'll close out with promoting. We've got, obviously, check out discountgamesinc.com for your gaming needs. Check out Mise en Minis for accessories. And as always, thank you very much to everyone who has been supporting the podcast through Patreon. And if you're not doing so, you can subscribe and be able to listen to the bonus conversations that we are doing there. So, Brad, thank you again very much for being on this episode. I definitely appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.